Welcome back to the Nullified Take on YouTube, where Will and I have got the TNT takes for you on Wheel of Time, episode 6, I believe it is now. We've only got 2 episodes left for this season, which is crazy to believe. It feels like we only just started watching it like 2 or 3 weeks ago, Will.
And it's scary to think that it's already nearly finished. We would have so loved to have had maybe 10 episodes, but no, just the 8, sadly.
Yeah, it's been definitely heartwarming to see that Wheel of Time has done well on Prime on the streaming. It's constantly in the top 10. For the longest period of time, it was number 1 in the top 10. I think it's only just recently been overtaken by another show I saw yesterday in the top 10 here in Australia.
I think it's still the top 10 in the States. I could be wrong, but I feel like I saw a post on Twitter yesterday saying 40 days in a row it's been top number 1 on Prime, which is great.
That's great. Yeah, so the one that's taken it over is the Continental, which is from the world of John Wick.
And that was literally just released this week, I think. So it's a brand new drop too, I believe. So
I wonder if that one had all of the episodes released at the same time, and maybe that is why it is as popular as it is. I'm not too sure, but obviously with Wheel of Time, we're only getting to see one episode at a time. So I'm sure people who are following the show closely, as soon as it releases, they're probably right in there and they're watching it. And I had a bit of I had a barbecue this week, and I told you before we hit the record button, I had a barbecue. I went to a couple of friends, like friends who I actually met in New Zealand years ago, who moved to Melbourne, and we're now catching up after 12 years living in the same city again. And going over going over there, this friend of mine is a massive Wheel of Time fan. And I actually forgot about it because I've got another friend who I told everybody about from high school who was a big fan. And they had the full collection of the books in their house. I stole one of it, which I thought was maybe like one of the first covers because it looked quite old school, and they've got the Prime covers now. But you had to show me up before we went live.
This was one of my old – these were the older ones. I'm sure there was probably one prior to this, but these were sort of like the old fantasy. They'd put the image on, like the very graphic image on the front to try and clue in teenage boys to try and read it. And like I said, there's a bit of a Celine there, and a Lyle and Rand there with the horns. Very worn, very well read.
You earned the title Wheel of Time here on the podcast once again. But I'm so excited to get my hands on this book because obviously as soon as the season is over, I've been holding off from reading the second book. I will be getting into the second book, even though I know the storyline has deviated quite a bit. This friend of mine, he is one of those fans of Wheel of Time that really doesn't want to watch the show now. Purist. Because he's like, he's a purist. The show has deviated too much. He's not letting his partner watch it, who hasn't read the books. And I told them I haven't read the books and I'm enjoying it. And I've got to say, like, just hating on the show for, and I get it. Like, I mean, there's certain things that I'm such a big fan of that I probably would be in the same boat if I was one of those fans that have been with the books from the start. But I do feel like people are missing out on some of the great acting that is happening in front of our eyes this season. Because one thing you have to say, if you take your rose-tinted glasses off and you look at this in a vacuum, the people that have been casted onto the show is doing a phenomenal job, Will.
Yeah, 100%. The cast is, they've been given their roles for a reason. It's not like, yes, some of the cast look and are described differently in the books, but my goodness, if they had found an actor that encompasses that character more so than they just don't look how Robert Jordan described them, I'm happy with that, because these actors are taking to life, bringing to life these roles, and my goodness, this episode this week,
there's a lot to get into.
And I just, there's that emotional damage meme that kept popping up, and there was a lot of instances like that during this. It's just like, the actors, fantastic. The set and costumes are on point. The costumes in particular. The set's a hard one because you're trying to give a vastness to the world and the cities, and often you've got a limited budget, so you're smaller and you get that feel sometimes. But if you can look past that and just see the attention to detail that's given, The attention to the lines, some of the scripts, little bits of line that have us and have me writing down notes going, oh, this could lead to, because they are being very cautious and careful with what they're saying. A lot of the time, there's the odd bit that just don't make sense, but by and large,
very interesting observation there from you. And I knew, I was so glad, because at one point there, it looked like maybe our schedules wouldn't align in regards to when we could pre-record this. So that's the reason we are pre-recording this for everybody that are listening to this later on. Will, I know, is gutted. He loves the interaction with the live audience, yeah, as do I. But, yeah, you know, we wanted to make sure we recorded this. And at one point, we almost didn't align. In fact, Will has just had the spicy cough, and he's coming back from the spicy cough to do this.
Still do, apparently. Yeah. And this is, I slept all afternoon, and instead of my normal coffee, I'm on a lemon and honey and ginger hot water, which is very much against my normal, but it's definitely helping.
We're appreciating you being here, because you're going to pick up on a lot of things that I missed out on. But I want to start off on this episode, and we're going to talk a little bit about this character and all of the different scenes that happen, because I feel like this is one of those episodes, again, where they bounce back and forth in a lot of different scenes. But I want to talk about this character's story arc. You know, a couple of episodes ago, the story arc went around Nynaeve, but this one was very much about Egwene and what she went through. And I think this is a perfect picture to bring up, because this kind of embodies the situation she's in and the beginning of this episode. And I've got to say, man, it broke my heart seeing her in this situation. I know that people were saying that they found it interesting how shocked I was when she was collared, but I think that this kind of, you know, I saw this coming. They don't treat Egwene or anybody, any of their money, as human beings, as people, as women. They're basically like pets. They're like dogs. They are on a leash, and they've got owners. And a lot of this episode is focused on her and her keeper, the person who's becoming her owner, which is Rema, I believe is the pronunciation of it.
Rena.
And, you know, this was psychologically at so many different levels, how she broke her down, the training that she had to go through, what she had to unlearn. I mean, imagine believing that the sun is the sun and the moon is the moon, but then suddenly you've got to believe that the moon is the sun and the sun is the moon. It's kind of how I took that. It was a very interesting episode. And man, oh man, this character is going through some hell in this episode.
Torture, straight up torture. And it was, there was so many, like, people talked about, and I actually agree with them, is it's top 10, like 10 out of 10 for the episode. But I don't know how easy it is to rewatch, and I don't know how much rewatching it's going to have. Like, I've rewatched it twice now, and as I said before, I watched it for the first time sick on my phone, and actually watched it on my computer just before, and it hit me even harder, just that little bit more, yeah, big screen, more wrapped around in the hearing, and oh man, it's just gut-wrenching. And they just, there's a lot of people previously will try and talk the Sanshin and the books and go, oh, you know, they're all right, you know, like, there's no, they treat these women, they're not women, they don't call it, they say, you're no longer a woman, you're a Devane. And you know, there's a line from Rena towards the end of it, like, nothing exists outside this room, you know, this picture, this cup, my cup is the size of your world, like, don't worry about, forget about everything else, this cup is your world. Now,
it's indoctrination is basically what it is.
It's literally breaking her. Like, yeah, you're breaking in a stallion, basically. You're breaking it in. And there's that line where they say the strongest Darmane are the hardest to break in, are the hardest to break.
Yeah,
and
it was Rena, brutal.
But the relationship, Rena took that character on. Zelia Mendes, who plays Rena, she's perfect in that role of just, like, you could just sense that she wants to be proud of Egwene. You know, we're going to leave Egwene with her name for now. Like that's a treat to you. We don't normally, but we're going to leave that to you. We're going to leave you with your name. It's okay. Egwene, yeah, it's okay, but we'll leave it with you. Like, it's not treating them as equals. It's not treating them as a female talking to a female. It's, I'm talking to my dog here. your dog, you've got lots of power. You know, you'd be great at finding criminals, sniffing out, But you just need to be a good Damane. And
but what I found interesting, I just want to add to that as well. What I found interesting was Rena saying that she wanted to cultivate a friendship between the Soldan and the Damani. And, you know, that's something that they don't normally do. But I think her idea of what friendship is really fucking twisted, to be honest with you, because
they're still not equals. Friendship, it's not an equal friendship. You know, like it's a, they joke about a dog being a man's best friend, but there's still that level of
you need to know your place.
And just the torture and the makeup that happens throughout this and the physical changes that happen to Egwene to Madeline
I'd
completely forgotten. I remember growing up and I had a wee dude that was in my primary school that got ran over by a tractor, and he spent a long time with eyes like that, and that had gone. When I saw their eyes like that, I'm like, whoa, that's right. That's how that, like, and it's pitch perfect. Like, oh,
it's brutal.
That's a lot of pain to get that. You know, that's savage. That's not something you often see to that extent in movies and stuff when they're talking about torture and beating someone. And like, you see the bloody nose or a cut lip or whatever, but you don't often see bloodshot, like blood, not even bloodshot. It's literally blood blistered almost. Eyes, you don't see that.
No, it's an next level. It you could definitely see, like you said, throughout this how it became more and more painful for her. Obviously, because like you said, she is very strong-willed in her own mind, trying to resist constantly. There's this test with the water pitcher and having to pour water for herself, which is even more evil because she can't even get to that water pitcher to get water for herself, to be able to drink water. And we don't know for how many days she was there. It felt like this wasn't one day. It felt like this was over quite a few days with her not having water at all. You know, not like she just wanted to inflict pain on her captor, and she couldn't get that vision out of her head. And every single time got knocked back because she couldn't hurt, and she had to realize she couldn't hurt. And then the end of this episode, when she finally is able to get this, there's this moment, and this is where the actress who plays Egwene just did such a good job, because you can see it in her face, her demeanor. When she is able to touch the pitcher and throw water, there is a mixture of relief and disgust within her face that she is now able to do this. And it shows you that the training that has happened has subconsciously changed her mind, because consciously she still wants to inflict damage. She still wants to not be a dog or on a leash to the Soldan in this case. But subconsciously, her body has had enough. Her body is caving in. Her mind is caving in to the fact that she doesn't want to go through this pain anymore. And I think that level of storytelling and acting, it's award-worthy in my mind. And I'm not just gaslighting it. I thought this was brilliantly acted.
And that's it. And we've been talking about the acting previous episodes as well, and likes of Nynaeve's acting and everything else. But this just... holy shit, what's going to happen in the next two episodes if the acting levels keep going,
keep increasing like this? Yeah.
Because my goodness, that scream at the end of this when she realized what she's done was just gut-wrenching, absolutely soul-breaking, that yell and scream. And then that cut to the Aes Sedai and the other cell was just like, oh.
Yeah, and not just the normal Aes Sedai, one that we actually saw. Yeah, Sidda, one that we actually saw in the first season. In the first season, she was there when Moraine was expelled from the White Tower. She was actually in the season, so quite interesting. There she is, and she said she ended up breaking a lot quicker than Egwene. So once again, showing the power within Egwene to be able to withstand the kind of torture and the training that she went through for so much longer than someone of this level, of this experience within the Aes Sedai ranks.
Yeah.
Because basically the Sidda is like, she's the head of the Blue Aes Sedai.
Yeah, right? There's it's like your parliament, basically. Your top two, I think it's three sitters per Aja that get to go into the circle, essentially, with the Amarillian seat. And they help sort of govern everything. Three? I'm pretty sure it's three. Could be two, but I'm pretty sure it's three from memory. And it just that the fact that she broke quicker, an experienced Aes Sedai of the Blues, a Blue Aja at a sitter, and obviously someone who's like, you don't get to be a sitter. And remember, I talked about how the Aes Sedai have a very much a power play on the amount of power you can control as well. So yeah, you can't actually become a sitter unless you have some level of power as well in the one power. So she's a strong user, a strong channeler, as well as obviously being very strong-willed and a powerful woman to become a sitter. And Egwene lasted longer than her. And then you've got to look back to Lyle's line, as he said, the Ogier, as he's walking out with Ingdar, and he says, there's steel underneath that exterior, you know, when they're talking about the kennels. And Lyle,
yeah, while we're on him, he had a very interesting, and that was an interesting line, but he also had a very interesting scene where the Lady Saruf made him sing, and that sort of was quite significant. You could tell that was something that he didn't want to do. It's something that is sacred probably to him and his people. Maybe there's a little bit more backstory that you can give us in regards to the significance of that.
Yeah, so Ogier, they live in what's called Steddings, which is, and they are very much about, like, one of the things that they love is looking after nature and trees in particular. And only certain Ogier can do something called tree singing. And that, honestly, a lot of Wheel of Time readers thought that that's probably something that the series would leave off, just because
difficult, you know, to explain, like, visually, or
difficult to explain, and whether or not it actually helps for the story. You know, it does in some situations during the books, just for different things, like, but in the series, we weren't sure if we'd ever actually get to see it. So I was chuffed when we got to see it. And it was a really interesting way that we got to see it. You know, Lady Saroth being this, she's a quintessential brat. She's a rich quintessential brat, you know.
She's got more money than Lord Turek. And
yeah, she talks about it because she's like, I've got more Damani than him. And if we go by Damani, they're worth more than money, you know. And she's just like, you know, she's bigwigging around her sycophants, you know, like her people that are around her. She's like, you know, look at me, I'm fantastic. Look, I can make him sing and make the tree bigger. But then as soon as they're all amazed with Lyle and start looking at him with awe, she's like, right, that's it, off you go. You know, like trying to shut it down, because she's realized now she's not getting any of that. They're looking at her, him, not her. And yeah, she's just a wee brat, really. I just was like, ugh, yeah, you get more and more horrible every time we see you.
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely
love the tree singing. That was fantastic. Absolutely loved it.
Thanks for giving us a little bit more of background into that as well, especially for those of us that are not book readers that maybe didn't understand the significance of it. But you could see again in the acting from the actor who plays Loial that there was this hesitation, and there was the whole talk about you know, it being kind of like sacred to them. So yeah, I could definitely pick that up, at least as someone that didn't have the backstory.
And see, Lyle is another character that fans struggle with a bit, especially book fans, because they've changed the look of him quite dramatically. So I think this was good to try and go, we know we've changed a bit, here's tree singing.
Yeah. A nod to people, maybe to try and get them on the right side.
But maybe. And the actor himself is doing apparently he interacts a lot with viewers and readers and stuff, and he's actually trying really hard to get amongst the whole world, which is really important. So he's gaining some followers and some
That's
fans
good.
That way.
That's very good. And let's move on to another character here that this episode was absolutely massive. Obviously, Lanfear has now been unmasked. Everybody knows who she is. She had that very hot dominatrix type of clothing on when we go back to her in the dream world, with Rand being sort of tied up on a wheel. And they have this conversation between the two of them, which is quite interesting, because this is the first time that Rand is now seeing her as who she is. And there was the whole talk about trust. There's a whole talk about Rand trying to play into her, but clearly she is, it's kind of like playing with a snake, you know what I mean? Like she is dangerous. And for Rand to be able to play with her in this manner, I think she's aware of what he's doing. And that's why she's like, I'll help you a little bit, but I've got conditions of how I'm going to help you and what you need to do from your end in regards to this. And one of those big conditions was to get rid of Moraine, for Moraine not to be close to him, and to also try and sow seeds of mistrust between him and Moraine in the scene where she said, you know, you were sent to this, or you went to this specific city where Loghain just so happened to be. Clearly Moraine is not to be trusted. There's more going on here. It was interesting to see how she's trying to push that wedge between them.
I really like this scene. I had, like I said, I had a good laugh at the whole, what makes you think you can't trust me? And he just does this little sly look at like, I'm cuffed up right now. And she just sort of like, oh yeah,
fair enough.
I thought that was great. I was like, yeah. I thought it was interesting that she admits to keeping his dreams safe for the last few months. But then we've also seen him having nightmares still. So that means that if that's the case, she's the one causing these nightmares purposefully, which I thought was quite interesting. I also thought it was interesting that she is trying to say to him that separating with his friends is no good. In that scene, she's like, you know, why would you know, you don't know where your friends are, you've separated from them. That makes it easier for Ishmael to get to them. And he's like, you know, she's like, you've pushed them away. I thought that was a really interesting interaction for her to have with him there. And then the one condition, and then it cuts back to him leaving Moiraine. And I want to have a little pause there. There was, on my second watch, there was something that it made me a little bit on my first watch, and I didn't really put a finger on it. But then I watched it a second time, and then I kept going back and going back and going back. About the 7:43 mark on the show, and anyone who's watching this, curious to see your thoughts. There's a slight, he wakes up, his eyes are dilated. He looks, Rand wakes up, he looks over to Moiraine, and Moiraine gives this really insignificant nod, little, really, really tiny little nod. And then you'll watch Rand give a head shake at about 7:47. Literally just cuts from her doing a little nod to him doing a little head shake, and then he busts him with the, I've got to go. So I'm wondering if there was something in between that, and I could be reading into it, but there's always layers upon layers with these shows, and also with these characters in particular from the books, knowing them. So I'm just curious, and that's not a spoiler from the book in the slightest. Because this whole scene and everything else is not in the books, so it's just from a pure speculative observation from watching just this episode again. I'm like, I wonder what that's about. It could be completely nothing, but it just seemed too interesting. And if you actually watch it, it's just strange from the wake up. Look at her; she does this really sort of little nod, and then he does this shake before breaking into what he wants to say.
Yeah,
could be nothing, but I'm curious.
No, but I think you picked up on something, because I didn't pick up on the nod and the little shake of the head, but there was this split second the first time I watched it, and the second time it wasn't as obvious, because I had this week I actually had the opportunity to watch the episode twice as well. And the first time I thought he was still in the dream world when he woke up. It was something felt off. And and then I was like, oh no, actually he's having a conversation with Moraine. This seems to be real. So you're right. It was almost like he was out of character for like a few seconds. It's something, and I don't know what it is, but it's well.
No, I don't know either, but I don't think it's done. I don't think it's an accident. Do you know what I mean?
There was something off on purpose on that scene.
It was just that the little slight, because I noticed his head shake and I went, what's he shaking at her for? And that's why I went back a smidgen, and then I watched it again, and I noticed a little head nod, and it could be completely nothing. I don't know, but I'm just
could also wondering. Be a whole thing of him playing into the fact that he is trusting Lanfear in a way by sending her away, and maybe letting Lanfear feel like she's starting to get her hooks in on him, and taking control by him pushing her away and all of that. But it was interesting that he said that, you know, the deal is you stay away from me, otherwise she will take you out. I'm keeping at PG for YouTube because you never know what YouTube flags, but she will take you out if you don't leave me alone. And then they had a very quick conversation about Loghain, and you know, Moraine's like, obviously I sent Loghain here where you can train, not under the eyes of the White Tower. It's not a big deal. Yeah. It's actually there for your benefit because you need to know how to wield the power that you have, and you don't currently have that ability. So that was a bit of a nothing conversation, but I do want to move on to the to the second part of the dreams that he had, because he does have a second dream in the episode as well. And this dream is quite a significant one because he wakes up having, by the looks of it, having taken out all of his friends, basically, in the show. And he has this guilt. And then Ishamiel comes into his dream, having a conversation with him here and saying, this is what you're going to become. This is where you're heading to. Men can't wield the power. You're going to go crazy and all this. Continuing to try and drive him away from his friends, I think, by doing that. And then Lanfear comes in and makes him vanish. And I love the whole interaction between the two of them where she's like, Ishi, you know, with his nickname, you know, like, don't be here if he doesn't want you to be here. And she takes him out. I still wonder if there is sort of a little bit, because you mentioned, like, it's strange that Lanfear is helping him to this degree, which for me, not knowing the full story arc of where she's going to end up and what's going to happen, it kind of feels like there could still be a plan behind a plan here where they're still working together in a certain way. But then the counterpart of me is that she's trying to, like, because she had this very important conversation with Leandrin, which we'll talk about in a lot more depth in a bit. But she had a very important conversation, and there was a specific line in that conversation where she said, you've sworn your oath to the dark, but there's a lot of ways or a lot of paths you can take within the dark to still get your way, basically. So I'm sort of wondering if that was her trying to get control of Rand at this stage to wield the power that the dragon has for her own purposes, even while still being obedient to the dark, if you get what I'm saying.
That line was Leandrin, not to Rand. I took Leandrin, a note of that, right?
I know it was, but I'm sort of wondering if that line that she used when she spoke to Leandrin, right?
Yes, it's a very interesting line.
I wrote it down
specifically to talk about that.
And we can definitely talk about that with the Leandrin bit in a bit, but I'm wondering if, you know, I know it's two different scenes, if that isn't sort of showing her motivation with Rand. Like, yes, she is aligned to the dark, but she is also her motivations and how she wants to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish is different to Ishamiel's. So by her having more control of Rand, because he's the power, everybody wants the power, she can then further sort of promote her own ambitions, if that makes sense. And it kind of ties in. I know it's two different scenes, but I feel like it gives you a better understanding of Lanfear as a whole and how she is trying to accomplish what she's trying to accomplish.
Lanfear's entire reason for becoming a dark friend is to get loose Theron. That was her,
which is the dragon MO. Before
and also because you basically, it's reborn, the wheel spins out the characters again and again. That's how the Wheel of Time works. So, like, everything's doomed to repeat itself, basically, and everyone's doomed to be reborn and come out and sort of redo. And that's where Rand is. He's the dragon reborn. He's Luz Theron reincarnate. So that's why she says, even a line earlier on, there is a little bit of Luz in there.
I love that line when she said it,
because there's little bits and little hints and little, you know, and she's seeing that, she's reading that, she's sort of putting that on to Rand. And seeing that for herself.
I think, can I talk about that line? Because what I got from that line was that in the previous episode, when she was talking to Ishamiel, she was saying, he's not like Luz, he's a lot more soft, he's, you know, a lot more caring and that. So by him trying to manipulate her, I think she saw Luz within that, because she's like, Luz was a little bit more calculated. He was a little bit more manipulative as well. And by him doing that, she saw that. That's where she got that flashback. You're still the same person, which is, it's interesting that the characteristics is maybe not completely, but there is some similarities in the characteristics that both of them have.
Yep. And also that what she said to Ishamiel at that point, she may have been trying to have Ishamiel underestimate Rand as well. Having spent a lot of time with him, she may have gone, actually, I don't want Ishamiel to know that he does have this bit of strength and a bit of a stubborn nature. Let's play him down as a weak, and let him assume that he's going to break because his friends are gone. You know, let's do that. You know, that's easier for her, because then he's a lot less caught unprepared for when Lou's there and all Rand does step up and kick some ass, basically.
So I do want to talk about another thing in this dream, this dream section, right? So she gives him the ability here to, she basically tells him within the dream world, you can firstly die. So you got to be careful, which is new for us to know that. I didn't know that as someone that's not a book reader. So that was good to know that you've got to be careful in there. But she also mentions that you can travel around the world. You can go anywhere. And she gives him the option here. And she knew going into that, giving him this option, she was going to build trust, but you could tell that it was killing her to give him the ability to go see a Gwen, because she knew as soon as she gave that option, there was one person that he was going to ask to see. And you could see it in her acting. You could see it.
I was literally like, don't say a Gwen. Don't say a Gwen, Dick. Don't say a Gwen. You say a Gwen, you've got this woman scorned in front of you who's, you know, don't say a Gwen. See one of the other ones. You've got any of you could visit. You could visit Perrin, Matt, any of them. Let's go Egwene, the one who's going to really fire up and put a target potentially on Egwene's back too. Think about that. Yeah. You know, if you've got this woman scorned, the last thing you want to do is highlight someone who you really love. Yeah, you love, essentially.
Yeah.
Because that's going to put her in the crosshairs as well.
Yeah, so, you should have said Lan. That would have been the right answer. It should have been Lan. Yeah, but, you know, the title of this episode was Eyes Without Pity, and it clearly was Rand here having no pity for Lanfear, saying, let's go and see Egwene. That's the title of the episode.
Savage. Yeah, but then that was savage an interesting move. Definitely. Little nod there too. The dream stuff is really interesting. Talking about, like you said, anyone can travel. You can travel in there. You can die in there. And then you can visit other people's dreams and talk to them. Now, going to sticking with that whole dream thought, that was where the line from Lanfear to Leandrin stuck out to me, because I went, oh, that's interesting of how she's put that. Because she went, there are many paths to walk through the night. Now, for me, that's not necessarily just being you're a dark friend. For me, I'm thinking that Lanfear is going to teach Leandrin how to walk through dreams and use her in the dream front and train her up in that mind. Because many ways of walking through the night, when do you dream? At nighttime. So for me, that's why I wrote that down and went, ah, cool. So she's going to start training Leandrin up to do some of that stuff, which I thought would be really
interesting. Because I did have a question for you, because Lanfear clearly understands the dream world really well. That's a power that she has. But Ashamiel can also walk within the dream world. Is this something that dark fiends automatically can do, or do they specialize in different things? Like, for instance, this is actually Lanfear's ability, but Ashamiel sort of also knows how to do it.
Walking in dreams without giving too much away was a lost art,
and then
I can't really go too much in
it's not something that all dark fiends can do. It is
dark friends, not all of them can do it at all. The Forsaken all can. It's a different level of strengths. Like it's a hard one to control, because it's in a dream, like, you know, even like just, you know, you think of something and you can change. So you can, you know, and you can think about something and you can change your clothing, or you can change things around you. You change where you are. You can travel from da 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 da. So there's lots of, you've got to be really controlled within your mind without, you start thinking about Trollocs next, you know, you're surrounded with Trollocs and they'll kill you. You know, like there's a lot of control that comes from it. And the more and more time you spent in it, I suppose, the more adept you are. But then there were certain channelers back in the day, and even non-channelers that were dreamwalkers. And it's an interesting one. I won't go into too many details for potential spoilers.
That's fine.
But the dream world, it's shortened to Tor, T-O-R, on Twitter talk and stuff, because it's just too hard to spell out. And T-L, and even to say it, it's a nightmare. But it's an interesting one.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the scene with Egwene lying down and them going in there. and then Rand for the first time appearing. Now, obviously, in Egwene's mind, she thinks Rand's dead. She doesn't think that he's still alive. And now he's appearing there. And I think that Rand wouldn't have known this, but what he probably did was he probably helped break her in this moment. Because, you know, when he went
hallucinating.
There, yeah. Well, not just that. There's this whole thing that when you go to war and you go fight behind enemy lines as a soldier, you don't want to be thinking about your wife and your kids at home. You've got work to do. You need to have a different mindset because you're in a battle. And I think that with her, she was so focused on the battle in front of her of not breaking and, you know, being very uncomfortable, being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And then she gets this person, this loved one that she cares so much for, coming into her dream, and she gets taken out of that space where when she comes back, I think that in a certain way, it probably weakened her at a time that she needed to have her head in the game. And it probably, I'm not saying it was the only reason, but I feel like it probably didn't help. And Rand probably didn't realize that what he was doing wasn't really helping her in that situation. Does that make sense?
It's an interesting take. I really like it. I see. Yeah. I'd almost flip the opposite side and say that it helped ground her with humanity, where you've got this slaver that's trying to basically torture you to the point where you forget that you're human. That was her a link very interesting to that. And also the other thing that they took in that with that whole going back to Egwene and Rena was the tree.
Yes.
That whole tree scene. I know the tree gives you happiness. And then
she has to burn it.
And then next, you know, she's burning it to withdraw that happiness. So like
there's a lot of symbolic things.
Yeah, it's dehumanizing her again. And that's where I thought the whole Rand visit may have actually been a don't forget you are human and you've got people that love you.
This is what I love. Like, you can have two different people getting two very different things out of the show. And that's the beauty about Wheel of Time right now, because I don't go into a scene for Wheel of Time thinking that the scene is what it is. I'm always looking for, what is the symbolic thing behind this? What is the extra layer that I can try and pick from it? And then, you know, when you and me come together and we talk about it, it's always interesting to hear the different theories. So for people that are listening to this at a later stage, in the comment section below, do you think that Rand appearing in Egwene's dreams helped her, or maybe
ran good, ran bad?
Did it hinder her, or did it help her? Let us know. Because we've got two different theories here. But I did want to move on from that to the Liandrin scene. So, you know, this is a big one. We spoke a little bit about what happened here, but the key thing here that I couldn't pick out by the end is that, you know, obviously Lanfear is brutal, and she's like, I'll do the work you can't do. I will kill your son for you. I'll take him out so that you can then basically do what you need to do. And this after Liandrin has already sworn an oath to the Dark. She's already done what she needs to do for her son to stay alive. And it's not made fully clear by the end of this episode if he is actually gone or not. So what is your theory on that?
He's definitely dead.
He's gone.
You see the blade.
She wasted her opportunity to try and keep him alive, basically. And they showed that they're not to be trusted.
Basically, Lanfear decided that this man, this son of yours, is holding you back. And we need to unleash this pure evil hatred and nastiness towards everything. And what was it? I can give a gift from one woman to another. You know, and she talked, and we got a little bit of extra backstory about Liandrin in there too. It was a quick throwaway line, but it was enough to go, you know, he's holding you back. You were beaten and starved and forced to marry before you bled, which basically meant she was a child bride who was beaten and starved. Like, those sorts of little bits sort of help layer upon what's created this character of Liandrin and gives you some reasoning behind it. And obviously the only thing that she's ever loved potentially was that son, and now he's gone, and Lanfear's like, right, now bitch, you're mine. You know you've sworn the oath to the Dark One, not to Ishmael. He's a man, you hate men, let's go. And then with that, and like I said, there are many paths to walk through the night, and that's where I just went, oh snap, she's about to unleash Liandrin on people's dreams and just basically formulate this nightmare stuff. Curious. Very, very curious to see what's going to happen.
It's very interesting. I want to move on to another character that also had Ashamiel sort of reach out to her in their dreams. And it was Min on this next part of the episode where Min sleeping and Ashamiel comes in and he says that, you know, make sure that he leaves with Rand. You know, you've brought him to this point. And you can see that at this stage, Min kind of wants to back out of the deal because she feels like, you know, at this point, she's done what she needed to do. But every time that she does that, another request is made upon it, which she feels isn't fair with the deal. She wants to have the visions taken away from hers. It's funny because a lot of the times when we think about, you know, superheroes, like even like Marvel superheroes or whatever, you think, oh, it'd be great to be able to be a mind reader. It'd be great to, but she has seen the burden of it, always knowing the fate of people before they do, seeing a friend that she now starts to get closer and closer with and Matt, and knowing that his destiny is to go out there and what we at this stage think is betray Rand, but it could be one of many things that she's seeing. I imagine the visions aren't always completely clear to her, but it looks like he took him out and she's trying to prevent that from happening, right? So she's got this problem. And I like that little line of her where she's like, well, if I don't do it, what then? And he doesn't tell her what. So she's like, well, you didn't tell me what's going to happen, so I don't know if I'm going to stick to the plan.
I'm feeling quite confident enough to be able to talk about this because it's well off the book, what's been written in the books. So I'm just going to...
First, her story has diverged quite a lot, right?
And there's
one big theory around her now is if she's working with Ashamiel, is she in the same position as Leandrin? Did she swore
is she
oath?
A dark friend? Is she a dark friend is the question. Yeah.
And yes.
By the fact of her talking to Ishmael would make you think that she is.
Right.
But there's the that whole instance where they're talking and she's like, how did you know what I saw? That there was enough for me to go, it's bullshit what she saw.
Right. So he's probably manipulating her dreams or her visions.
Yeah. Because that was enough for me to go, oh, okay. Because theoretically, no one else can see what she sees. She sees the aura around the person. And then from there, the only way that anyone else is going to hear about it is if she tells us about it. So the only thought is she's dreamed about it or he's made her see that vision. And she, you know what I mean? So that's my thoughts in regards to that. So, because like I said, it's completely off the script. So I feel pretty confident to actually just bust in, but Min having this whole interaction with the Forsaken. No, never happened. Her being a dark one or a dark friend, sorry, not a dark one. I don't think she is. I don't think she will be. I think that would completely scupper the whole arc of Min.
What's supposed to happen with her in the future wouldn't make sense. Because I saw a lot of people online sort of complaining quite a lot about the direction that they're taking that character on. Obviously, as soon as I see anything like that, I'm like, okay, I can't read and I don't want to read what's going to happen. So I just immediately go out of it. I'm like doing I'm dancing with the swords, you know, every time I go on Twitter and I like try and deflect like Tai Chi, all these spoiler things, like, you know, try and direct them in different directions.
Until I've watched the episode, then I'm like, I'm deep diving into seeing what everyone's saying. There's some really, just anyone watching and has not read the book, please be mindful of Twitter trolls out there if you're on Twitter, because there's a few of them going around at the moment. Purposely spoiling story arcs for, you know, book 13, book 14. So please just be mindful of that. It's a dangerous space out there. Non-book readers or early book
come
readers.
Come here. Come listen to us every week. This is a safe space where we won't spoil 100%. Things
for you. No, not intentionally. try not to spill or spoil, to be fair. But no, Min. I'm still wanting to see a bit more from Min. She was one of the characters I really enjoyed in the books. And I'd like to see some more with her.
She's a bit of a side character at the moment.
And I'm not sort of attached to her at any point yet. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of the characters, even small ones like Rimmer, like that we'll talk about. I'm sure. Okay, we'll say Matt. No. We'll say Matt. We're talking about Min, but that small character. Matt, that whole Matt and Rand
scene. Can I'll paint the picture and you can go from there, as we've been doing. Going into this scene, love the scene where he's out gambling, throwing dice, and having a wild old time while Rand is walking in the village, and he hears Matt's voice and he can't believe himself. He walks up to him from behind and they embrace. This is the first time since season one that we've seen two of these major characters. I guess Egwene and Nynaeve have never really been split, but this is the first time the boys, one of the three boys, have met up back together. And hats off to the actor that plays Matt, because the emotion, again, top tier level acting. You could see it in his eyes, like how happy he was to see. I mean, his eyes look watery. They embrace and he's like, where's the others? He's thinking that Rand is with them. And then Rand having to reveal it's a long story and going through the whole thing about everybody else, because obviously he wasn't with them because it deviated due to things outside of the control of the producers with the story, but he wasn't there when everybody else was told Rand is no longer alive. So he didn't know that. And I love the whole scene about how Rand spoke to him and said, I thought I needed to stay away from them, but now I realize staying away is actually more risky for everybody that's from the Two Rivers and that they're in more danger. And as he's saying this, you know Matt's been struggling with that himself. So they bond over the fact that they both have struggled with being there for the others. And obviously the conclusion of this is just heartbreaking where it ends up. But I absolutely love the reunion between the two of them.
Oh, it was so nice, wasn't it? It was so warm from having this Egwene arc going on and with this torture, to seeing these two friends that have grown up, that are Tavrin has brought them together to meet them up. You know, that's their power that they have by, you know, being Tavrin, and they brought them together, and it's just fantastic. It was such a warming, you know, like you said, Matt Dyson as per usual. You know, clearly winning also, as everyone's like, and then as soon as he turns his back, they're all in there like, all right, we're going to get our money back while he's not looking. you know, and then also, like, I loved the bit, and it was a little nod to the fact that we've got a different actor as Matt, and it's the first time they've met since the actor changed, and it's Matt going, where is your hair? Like, you've changed.
Yeah, you look bloody awful.
You look different. And it was just like, oh, that's brilliant. Because I was worried that it was going to be the other way around, where it was going to be like Rand, like, oh, I know, you look good. You know, like, I was pleased that it was Matt going, what the hell's happened to you? Which, and he's the one in a nice dressed outfit, and Matt's the one who's looking all disheveled and dirty, you know? And he's the one saying, you look all, you know,
yeah, I thought it was funny as well. When he said that.
And then the first drink's on you because you bollocksed up my role. I was like, brilliant. I loved that whole scene where they were talking about, you know, you're not better off without Rand, and we're not.
And they were reassuring each other. It felt like these two characters at this time in the journey actually needed each other. They needed each other.
And then what happens afterwards just
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking again. And there was this whole bloody episode was like that, man.
Like, why do they keep playing with our emotions? Why do they keep playing with our emotions like that, man?
No, it was rough. But no, I felt for Matt there.
Because you know, like, Rand is like, Rand gave him an out. And he's like, listen, what I'm going through, this is some hectic stuff. You don't need to take this. This is my responsibility. You don't have to take this weight on your shoulders. And then Matt
back
is like
in an hour.
Reassuring
I'll be
him.
Back in an hour. No worries. Yeah, I've got to go break a girl's heart, and then I'll be back in an hour.
Yeah, like, and who's gonna prevent you from becoming an arrogant prick now that you're the dragon reborn? You know, it's gonna be me.
And it is. It's like, this becoming an arrogant prick, dragon reborn. Gee. it was great. And then
why people mentioned, like, I've not gotten it yet with Matt. Yeah. He's starting to warm up on me. The character's starting to warm up on me. It's starting slowly but surely. They're building to it. They're building to it for me, you know? And then having him and Min get together. And again, there's just so many good lines here, knocking on the door, like, hey, do you have someone in there? Should I be worried? Many, many men. And it's like, you know, what I'll remember about you is that you've got very low standards, except for when it comes to your drink. Such great moments. And he's so happy and jovial. To the point where Min is like, she's not even playing games like she normally does with him. She's straight to the point, brutally honest here. Listen, you can't go. what do you mean? Like, I haven't told you that I'm going anywhere. And she's like, you're going to this place, right? And she's like, this is what I saw. You can't go, or you will end up being the end of Rand. Brutal for him to come to that realization that he's not going to be able to be there, because he knows emotionally, I think he's more connected to Rand than anyone else, because the same insecurities he has about being there for his friends, he knows Rand is going through this, and he doesn't want Rand to have this weight of the world on him on his own. And he knows that he's going to have to let him down, and he's going to have to play into being the jerk that is never there for his friends once again. Which is what he tried to prevent.
There's two things that you're just heartbreaking. There's that, breaking, letting his friend down, and then also finding that he'd been betrayed by Min this whole time.
Yes, like he thought that also.
He thought that Min was there, was his friend. You know, they were going through it all together, and then he comes to the realization that she was put in the cell beside him purposefully.
Mm.
You know, like that to him, like he has not trusted anyone for a long time because of that dagger. And Min was the first person that he thought they'd formed a friendship. I'm breaking you out as well. Let's do this together. And we're going to, you know, we'll get through this together. And then to find out that it was all a facade. It was all fake. It was betrayal. And just
as heartbreaking. And even Min.
The acting was on point for both of them there too.
Yeah, like, even Min, like Min just saying, just her whole thing where she's like, listen, I am your friend. The reason I'm preventing you from going is because I know what's going to happen. You don't understand what this is costing me to come out and stop you from doing this. Like,
and
you know,
that's true too. And yeah, he might not ever find out what it's costing her, but he's never going to trust her again.
Yes, yes. It was heartbreaking because they had such good chemistry, these two actors together, these two characters together. And you just know it's such a tragic end to a storyline that I know everybody fell in love with. We had a lot of people in the live, even in previous weeks, talking about the two of them and how well they sort of fit together. But the next scene that I want to go into is one that was kind of teased at the end of the previous episode. And then it didn't fully make sense to me, but I was like, I need to see this next episode. This is going to be absolutely fire. And this is one that includes Lan. This is a big scene. Obviously, that he's still traveling with Alana and with her two warders at this stage. They do go to, I believe, a temple of the Dark
Forsaken.
The Forsaken. Yeah, which he's like, this is a strange place to camp. And there's the whole scene of them being in the tent. And as soon as, you know, things gets a little bit rowdy, he's trying to like sneak out to go do his thing because he's got bigger plans. And then gets stopped by the warders. He has to face two warders and an Aes Sedai. He's got no chance here, but they're kind of pinning him into a corner because at this point, he has held a very big secret. He's held Moraine's secret. He's not let them in on what's going on. And I find it interesting that throughout this whole time that they've built this sort of storyline, they haven't let in on the fact that they didn't fully trust him or that, you know, there was some doubt in their mind. So they kind of left it very late to say, listen, there's something going on. We don't know if you're part of the Dark. And then they had that whole line of the blood. And that's an interesting one. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I forgot. Is that sort of something that gets put out?
No, that was the poem that was written down that Moiraine got given from Baal Daemon. And he had that in his bag. And that's the one that Alana and Ivan found while Lan was meditating.
Right. So bringing a full circle, bringing a full circle on that storyline, and it's a crazy moment where he's like, okay, I've got no way of getting out of here alive. I found it very interesting that Alana picked up on the fact that he was trying to figure out where the seat was by asking a question, and she's like, why do you need to know this? Like, what are you planning to do? And he ends up letting it out. It's about Moraine. Yeah. It's about the dragon. And this is where things start heating up very quickly with that storyline.
Basically, he'd been a good wee warder and kept stum for all this time. And then he got to the point where he realized, if I don't tell them now, I'm not walking away from here without being labeled a dark friend. And he's like, I've been fighting the Dark One. Like, it's a huge insult for Lan and for any fan of Lan to ever think that he is a dark friend. Because his country, his people were run over by the Dark Friend, by the Dark years ago. Like, he's like the last of the line of the Malkia. So his one goal and the reason why he became a warder was to fight against, you know, the Dark One and Dark Friends. So the fact that they've threatened to say that he is just a huge insult to his name, really. And anyone, yeah, that threw everybody that's a huge fan of the books quite a lot, because they would never, like, should never have even suspected it. But they obviously needed, that was the only way they were going to get the information out of him.
Yeah, and it's because of the story is so different at the moment. And somewhere somewhere you need to speed up the story. And I think what happened here is it allowed for that to happen, because we do see them going to, how do you pronounce that? Is it Swan?
Suyan Sanche. I don't know. It's how I say it anyway.
The seat, Suyan. The Emerin seat.
Yes, the Emerin seat. She, that whole scene with her and the horse rides up, and then the blades, the power.
That was intense.
The crown of swords or blades that pop up, and then they just turn with, that was cool. That was cool. That's a really creative way of using the one power. And I just love that they do those little things. Like, she could have done one, but she's done this whole crown to make it look more regal and look more authoritative and have that power. And basically, Lana's like, it's about Moraine, and then it cuts. And it's like,
well, she knew as soon as she saw Lan, she was like, you're Lan. Here. Where's Moraine? What's going on? So she immediately, you could see her whole demeanor change. She knew something was up for Lan to be there without Moraine. And the way that the show did it, we haven't spoken a lot about Moraine. I'll be honest with you, it was the least appealing storyline. It was a weakness of this episode for me, was Moraine's storyline, because I feel like they're flogging a dead horse with her being the bad sister that's never been there. She didn't come back when her dad passed away. What would have been so important? Yada, yada. They've just beaten that storyline to death right now. And it's just not one that was that entertaining or interesting to me. But one that was interesting, one part of that storyline that was interesting, was the fact that she kept struggling to write this letter to Swan or Sean. I'm probably butchering it. And she couldn't. She tried a few times over to say, I've been stalled or something's happened to me, and to get the information out there. And then for Lan to beat her to the punch was quite interesting, because she's already at the village by the time that this letter is written, and she goes down to her nephew to go and make amends, where her sister comes in and says she's here with 14 Aes Sedai, and she's requesting that we talk right now, you know, which is a serious business.
An audience with you. Telling me you don't want to try a Bathana sandwich, you know, with the butter on both for friends. It's like, come on, man.
It's like, what is up with that storyline, man? Like, I don't know. Like, what's your thoughts on it? Like,
I just thought it was random. I was like, and then she comes back. Like, I did like that she said he's going to make a nice, like the whole bit about being a good king and stuff. I think that may pay dividends later on, that reaction or that little interaction there. But I don't think the whole fact that he can make a good sandwich is really going to pay off to anything important. But he was going to make, he did make one for Rand, but couldn't find him. So that was nice of him. Interesting around the 14 Aes Sedai turning up, rocking up. And also, you see the key players that are there. We've got
the Leandrin conversation.
Leandrin, we had Vera in there as well. And so we'll see what happens there.
There was a nod to the last time that they had 14 Aes Sedai was to put a new king on the Sun Throne, which was interesting. Yeah. So that was a different Emerin seat. It wasn't her, because she said maybe this Emerin seat would, you know, be different or judge the situation differently or something like that. It was an interesting line that I don't have the backstory on it, but it makes it sound like this doesn't happen very often. It's been a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. Just the whole Suyan Sanche just looks so royal and regal, didn't she? Just rocking up, like just that.
She
that
plays the role well.
We were talking about characters and set and costume. The costume for her is just on point. All the two times we see her, and you just get that vision of authority and power from everything that she does on screen, which is really important. Because we've not seen her much. We haven't. This is, you know, this episode is the first time we've seen her in the show, in the season, and you automatically get that understanding of power and presence and authority. Just, and that's, yeah, fantastic acting, and also just the costume and set design. Be curious to see what they do with the 14 Aes Sedai. Oh, Rhymer.
I wanted to come into Reimer. I wanted to talk about Reimer because this was another one where if you emotionally struggled with the Egwene part of the episode, I think emotionally this was quite a heavy scene at the end of this episode. But we'll try and start off with where the whole episode started, with herself and with her water.
Elaine and Nynaeve.
They have a collar, which we basically find out how the blue Aes Sedai sitter was captured. They were all sent there on a mission to figure out what this new threat is to the Aes Sedai, to the White Tower. They severely underestimated the Sunshine and their capabilities. And a few of them, three of them were in battle, two died. One of them was caught, which is the blue Aes Sedai sitter that we later on realize is next to Egwene. In the kennels, which is what they call it. And, you know, having that battle, they found, or they managed to get a collar from that battle. So that is the thing that they've got. And this is now the key to trying to find Egwene and to set her free, is to understand how can you unlock it. So throughout this whole episode, they try and figure that out. There's a lot of focus on Nynaeve and the fact that she struggles to control the one power. She doesn't have subtlety. She can either blast or she doesn't have it. And there's a lot of talk about the fact that if you use too much of your power, then the Dahmani can sense that there is a channeler in the region, which is that they're trying to prevent that with, you know, the conclusion being here. Well, prior to the conclusion, there's great dialogue. And I think I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well. There's great dialogue between Elaine and Nynaeve, because Nynaeve doesn't know who the hell Elaine is. Elaine has only had time with Egwene up until this point, and she's like, what are you doing here? Go back to the White Tower. This is not your fight. You know, why are you still here? And she's like, well, she's my friend, and she's like the only friend I've ever had. And you could see as the episode progressed that Elaine is creeping her way into Nynaeve's heart, and that they're slowly but surely she's getting the approval.
The handhold. I'd actually not really registered that they'd not spent a lot of time together up until this point.
Not any time.
No.
Yeah, so she's like, really, who are you?
It must be really weird for Nynaeve to be like, why are you putting yourself through this, you know, queen to be? Yeah. And that is, you know, why are you risking your life for someone you barely know? But I find that interesting for Nynaeve to put that out there, because I feel like she'd be someone would do that anyway, just for the right of good. And you know, she was quite prepared to jump out there and help Reimer also, and it was Elaine that stopped her. And she hardly knows her too, so I don't know. But that whole relationship between the two is definitely blossoming, which is cool. And they're a good chalk and cheese type thing for a lot of things. You know, someone who's been a wisdom who was in charge of a town but had nothing, compared to a queen to be who has everything and will be in charge as well. So they're both coming through that authoritative state, but from completely different worlds, which is interesting.
It's weird. It's weird. The way I'm picking out the characters right now is that Nynaeve is a lot more cold to outsiders, but she's warm to the people that she knows. Where Elaine, who could very easily be the same, seems to be a lot more compassionate and caring. Like, really, there's a real difference between the ways that they approach problems, if that makes sense, which I really enjoyed.
I definitely am enjoying that. And then
because Elaine's not taking offense to any of this. Like, imagine like somebody else, like, you know, being this brutal with you in this situation, and she could have easily been like, sod off, you don't know me, you don't know where I'm from and what I'm about. But she's like trying to become friends with Nynaeve and trying to understand her.
Could have really caused easily more drama, you know. But it didn't, and
Elaine, so it's a scripted show. If this was two real girls in the real world, like, you know, I had a sister, she told me all the stories, it would never have gone down that way.
and you spend a lot of time watching reality TV, which is always all about bloody flaming on someone else, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. So it's refreshing.
So adults handling a situation
appropriately.
The fact that they also told, and you saw how shaken both Reimer and her water Basan was at the Leandrin drop, and finding out that there's the Black Aja there, like
the three oaths was broken.
The three oaths were broken, visibly frightened, and was like, okay, we've got to get out, you know, everyone's in danger from Leandrin, because she'll know if there's one, there's more. You know, if there's one, you know, if there's enough, if she's dropped, you know, how many others are there? And I really like, now There was also a mention to I've got my note written down here, to a boat captain, and being that we love a good tavern potential link with the Wheel of Time, the boat captain may be someone we've already met. Don't know.
Maybe the first episode.
Maybe. Yeah. So yeah, just put it out there. That's how Robert Jordan writes.
That person might still come into play when they finally escape this town towards the end, and may still be waiting for them. But I found it really interesting that, you know, at the point where she was, okay, this news needs to get back to the White Tower, you girls go, we'll handle Egwene. And they both sort of came together at this point as well by saying, listen, you've underestimated our will and bond to Egwene. Yeah. We're not going anywhere, which was really cool. And then obviously with Rima realizing that, no, this is not going to happen, so we're going to have to work together to unlock this collar. But then throughout this, they come to the realization, because Nynaeve do use a little bit too much power, which obviously is going to give their situation away, but they come to the realization that it's broken. It has to be put on someone to be repaired.
To be healed,
which is kind of weird, because...
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's weird. It's very, very interesting. I thought that too. It's like, what is it? I wrote it down. Collar needs to be healed. Only way it will be complete. And it can't be broken, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, because how do you get Egwene free if it can't be broken? Like, that's what's going on in my mind, obviously, without knowing what's to come in these future episodes. But again, Nynaeve in this moment looks at Rima. She's like, I'm so sorry, you know, I messed up. And then I really love this character, so I hope that this character survives and comes out of this. But I don't have high hopes for how this whole episode ended. But she is in that moment. She is still, even though she knows what's coming, she is still trying to have Nynaeve calm down. And she is still motherly in that situation and saying, don't worry about it. It's okay. Take these rings. Take my ring. Make sure to take it to the flames. Promise me you'll get the Aes Sedai that have been captured. And she calls her a sister. She basically sees her as an equal, which I thought all of this was very symbolic.
It's huge.
And Nynaeve just realizing the amount of weight that's being put on her shoulders and saying, you know, you can't do this. You can't put this weight on me. And she's like, I've got no one else. You are that person now. You're going to have to step up moving forward.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, sister. She called her a sister. And that had a huge impact. You could see that on Nynaeve as well. So we'll see how that changes her story arc a little bit, or sort of helps her grow. And then she goes out to do battle.
That her was the most brutal scene of the episode. I mean, just
really
the way that she was fighting. Like, I mean, there was a lot of brutal stuff that happened this episode. It was a lot of pain. There's a lot of pain, but just seeing how she was bending limbs and breaking people, and then what I found so and again, this just shows you, like, it's almost for them to get collared is like dying, and she realizes it. She, like, Egwene didn't realize what she was getting herself into at all when it happened. But Rima's going into this thing with her eyes open, which I feel like is almost worse. And she's like begging her warder to kill her before being captured. And before he can do that, he gets taken out. It was just brutal. It was just so much brutality. Seeing the pain in her eyes when she gets collared, like, I just had all the feels for it, man.
Yeah. And watching the Saldam, like, basically fold up. One of them gets basically this, like, it's interesting because she's a yellow of the yellow Aja.
Which is healers, right?
She's a healer. So she knows they know everything about the body. So she's reverse healing things. She's breaking bones. She's melting skin. Like, she's creating lesions on the skin. Like, she knows the body inside and out. She would have spent time, you know, years and years delving into people's bodies to heal them and putting things back together. And here she is basically breaking it apart like that. Was just savage. But I was watching that.
Did you notice something there? She was not attacking the Damani at all. She didn't hurt a single Damani. She was going after the Soldan.
Yes, but remember, what's that line that the Blue Sitter keeps saying next door to Egwene?
Oh, I can't remember the line, but she was rattling a few things. You don't remember
it? Oh, my Lord.
Tell us.
I've written it down. It says, whatever hurt the Soldane feels, the Damane feel twice over.
Wow. She probably didn't realize that.
No. So she's working really hard not to attack the Damane, and she's just attacking the Saldam.
Oh,
but they're
no.
feeling that twice over. So I was watching that and going, she was not attacking the Damane one little bit, but every hurt that the Saldam feels, the Damane feels twice over.
Brutal.
So these poor girls are getting their bones snapped like matchsticks. And that was, like toothpicks. And that was what I was thinking. I was like, she's trying her best not to put those girls through harm, knowing that they're collared, but they're feeling twice as much because of the way the collar works. Yeah, because you would think of that, but no.
I was like, it's one of those moments. It's one of those moments where I'm like, I'm figuring it out. I can see what's happening, and then there's like another level to it, and I didn't realize that's what she was saying. I thought it was just her being like rambling about the whole thing, and then she's now.
And Rena says it at the start as well. Like, you know, you try and punch me, whatever food I feel, you feel double. So those poor girls were getting twice the pain. And but Rima was trying her best not to attack them, you know. Yeah. she was unwittingly torturing those girls even more. Rough. And then she wanted to, you know, she's trying to get her water to kill her, and got collared all the same.
Brutal episode. I think you said in the beginning 10 out of 10 for the episode. I don't know exactly where I would rate it. I'd probably give it a solid 8.5, 9 out of 10 personally. I think there's always room for improvement.
But Oh, yeah.
I really, really love this episode. And I feel like every time I come into the podcast with you as well, I'm saying that over and over, which is a good sign. Like every episode seems to be building on the previous episode.
Well, that's it. And that's where I'm just like, what are they going to do? They've got two episodes
left,
of this season. Are we going to get a 90-minute episode 8? Are we going to get... Like, it's really interesting. You would have noticed from season 1 to now, they've actually changed the startup video, like the start opening of the show.
I normally skip the intro. I don't normally watch the intro.
I actually quite liked it, the old one. And when I first saw it, the different one in this season, I'm like, oh, they've got rid of that. Okay. But the reasoning behind it is they've been given so many episodes that they're allowed to use. They were trying to maximize the amount of time they've got. So they went, do you need 2.5 minutes of this?
No.
Or do you just want a quick little wheel of time and we get straight into this story? And that's what they've done this season. So I really appreciate that from them. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's
and all. They've, yeah. And the episodes have been, you know, just a little bit longer than an hour too. Like, you know,
and this is what people need to realize and appreciate, that there are some severe constraints put on to these hugely. Creators to tell a massive story.
Desperately. And even the pace, 8 episodes.
Even the pace that they're moving at, and not knowing much about the books, like I said, I am literally gonna start reading this bad boy when this season's done. I've heard that there are some things being taken out from book 5 and book 3, and there's different things coming in, and that the timeline's a little bit all over the place. That kind of makes me wonder if they even have 12 or 14 seasons, however many books there is. They probably have less than that. They're probably thinking, well, we're guaranteed to probably get to like 6 or 8 seasons, but we need to get more things done within a short period of time.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with Prime and how their TV series runs run. I'm just pleased they're not on Netflix, because they generally don't get past season 3.
Yeah.
season 3.
We need to continue to rave about the show, unless it was really bad. I don't think it's a bad show. Again, I am coming from a different angle, but I'm enjoying it as a casual viewer coming into this as well.
Yeah.
There's one scene we didn't talk about, and this is where we're sort of going to conclude this whole podcast as well, and that is the ending, towards the ending of this episode, where Lan meets up with Rand, and Rand is happy to see him, but then Lan says, hey, you know, you're going to have to come with me pretty much, and you're not leaving this place. So we now know that if you watch the little next on bit at the end, which I quickly did tonight before we jumped on, because I knew you probably would have watched it, that Rand is going to end up at the White Tower in front of the Imelin seat. And there's probably, or I don't know if it's the White Tower, but it looked like he's in front of her at least. And that she now is going to either prepare him for something or constrain him. Like, I don't know what that storyline is going to lead to, but Rand isn't going to just be able to freely walk into a situation where he can go and rescue a Gwen at this moment. It really is up to Nynaeve and Elaine to do that, because his journey has taken a bit of a detour.
Yes, and that's where we're not sure what's going to happen between now and the end of the... We've got two episodes to go. You know, when are they getting to farm?
Yeah.
When's he getting to farm? We don't want, you know, we want him into farm. We need Egwene being freed or breaking free, or and Lyle, and that, you know, we need something happening there. The story's sort of apexing to there, but now we're in episode 7 and we've got this stop. We've got this red light going on in Carahan that we've got to deal with first. So it is a bit of a detour, and whether or not it's going to be a long season episode long detour, or if it's just going to be a quick 10 minutes at the start and then he does something, and we don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I really liked in that clip that you saw where Lan is obviously trying to get Rand's sword, and he does this little spin to get his sword off. I thought that looked really smooth. Always curious, always. It's great. It's very well done is what I'm enjoying, because if it wasn't, we would struggle to talk about it, because there wouldn't be little intricacies and little bits and bobs. Did you, speaking of that, before we do finish, did you have any viewers reach out with any information or questions or stuff?
No, I don't believe anybody reached out with any questions prior to coming into the recording. But if there are questions that you have, make sure to leave it below in the comment section. I read all of it always. And if there are any comments that you made afterwards that I don't know the answers to, I'll be sure to forward it through to Will so he can jump in and also give his thoughts and opinions and answers to certain things. If there's anything that stood out that we maybe didn't discuss, and you're a book reader, not a non-book reader, then you don't know sort of what's happening, feel free to ask those questions away, and we'll give you answers in a non-spoiler manner. Both myself and Will may even jump in at some point during the live and leave comments if we've got a couple of minutes free. But like I said, this week we had to do it slightly different because our schedules were a little bit all over the place. But we appreciate you jumping in and watching this. In fact, if you have watched it up until this point, please consider subscribing. It's the best way to show support. I've loved doing this scripted show on the channel. It's the first time I've ever done scripted show on the Nullify Take channel. And I've enjoyed doing it with Will. So if you guys put likes on this, if you comment on this, if you subscribe, that lets us know that you want to see Will on the channel more frequently in the future. And who knows what we might be able to do next or dive into next after the season's over. Because I know, Will, you've been enjoying talking a little bit about this as well.
Yeah. I always enjoy talking about Wheel of Time. It's nice to have someone to talk to about it and with. But I'm sure it could be a lot of different topics we could chat about too. Speaking of that, I did get some messages from Andre Lee as well.
Go for it.
He said he sort of rushed through his notes thinking that we were going to be recording on Friday night. So he sent it through to me on Friday. So I've just had a quick look through. His first line, his statements was, "Chris, pour me some water, please. Will, pour me some water, please."
Having too much fun with that.
Yes. And that was, emotional damage, 100%. He was pleased to see that Nynaeve and Elaine storyline's getting some traction. Brutal episode for the Yellow Archer. We've actually had two episodes now, last episode and this episode, where we've got to know a little bit more about the different Archers. The brown Archer in the episode before, and then the yellow one in this one. And we've got to see some strong Aes Sedai from those, which is really exciting. So Alana being a green, we get a little bit from her, but she doesn't really scream green if you don't know what you're looking for. But you definitely get the "I'm yellow," which I thought was really interesting. And then the other thing from Andre was said is with only two episodes left, are they going to leave season two on a cliffhanger or potentially like a reunion type thing? I, for the life of me, hope it's not a cliffhanger because I don't really want to wait another year or so. I struggle with those sorts of cliffhangers. I just finished The Bear and that finished on one like that. And it's like, no.
You see, this is what I'm saying. I know people want me not to skip too far ahead with the books, but I'm like, you know, if you guys are going to wait, like it's probably not going to take me a year to read this, right? So it's going to be tough. And now that I know that there are like little bits and pieces in from other seasons. Like, you know, I might be tempted by the end of that book to read the next one. But it's been a lot of fun talking to you about this latest episode of Wheel of Time. You know, we'll do this again next week. Hopefully next week we're live. At this stage, assume we're live at the normal time that we normally record. And if there is anything that pops up that makes it impossible for us to do so, we will have to do it in a similar way. But you'll definitely get your Wheel of Time content right here on the Nullified Take channel over the next week. But for now, thank you so much for watching, and we'll catch you guys next time. Bye.